Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Hi, and thank you for joining us for the Compass Catholic Podcast. My name is Caitlin Kano. I'm joined by my co-host, Diana Rojas, as we meet every week to explore personal finance topics from an authentically Catholic perspective. On this podcast, we explore the spiritual, emotional, and economic aspects of money. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to see you. I feel like we record often, and this week we didn't really see each other that much, so I was missing you a little bit this week.
I know. It's so funny for you being across the country. I'm like,
I know. My friends, when I talk about you, they're like, does she live here? I'm like, no, she doesn't, but it's okay. We're still friends from afar.
From afar. It's okay, though.
But I'm excited for today because you have a lot more wealth of knowledge in the area of income taxes and all that stuff, and I've been hearing a lot of interesting things, so I'm excited to just kind of go back and forth with you with some questions about something about income taxes being turned off, and just that led to some convos with my friends, and they were asking all these questions about income taxes, and I was like, I don't know, but I have a friend that can help me answer these questions. So I'm really excited to get into those questions with you. Hopefully you can help me with that.
Yeah, I'm excited. And first of all, so I'm not a tax expert. I have a couple different alphabet soup things after my name. I'm an AFC, I'm an FFC. I'm not a tax expert. So all the information I'm going to give you today are things you can just search online, and it's information. I'm not giving advice, but I'm curious what your question or what you've been hearing.
For anyone that's listening that may not know, or was me a little few months ago, that doesn't understand, like, what is the federal, like, what is federal income tax? What does that mean? Like, that's a big fancy word. What is that?
Essentially, it's a tax levy by the Internal Revenue Service, which is a government entity. And their job is to collect revenue for the government. So the income tax has a long and storied history. Essentially, it really came about during the days of the Civil War when the government needed income and it didn't have a reliable way to secure it. So they decided to start levying an income tax. It's had some back and forth in the court, but essentially Congress decided it was necessary for the government to collect income tax from its citizens in order to have a reliable income into the government for things like maintaining the military, creating roads, building bridges, all these different things. So the IRS is the government entity that collects that income tax. And they collect it on individuals, corporations, trusts, other legal entities. And they collect this money. And then they also collect it on things like employment, earnings, and capital gains. So some just key takeaways to know about the income tax is that it's the largest form of revenue for the government. And it's for a variety of expenses like you know, fixing the government or the country's infrastructure, providing education, public transportation, all these different things. And something else to know is that you have federal income tax, but you also may have state income tax. Federal income tax is imposed by the federal government, and then states can charge their own income tax. Currently, there's 9 states that don't charge income tax, and where I live, Nevada is one of them. So I don't have to worry about a state income tax. I only have to worry about federal, but 41 other states have to be concerned about federal and state income tax.
Interesting. That's really, I think you broke it down very well. So thank you for breaking that down. So basically my paycheck that I see is smaller because part of that's going to pay for things government needs to take care of. That's pretty simple way of putting it, I think. But one of the other things that you mentioned was you said something about tax brackets, and I've heard that term before a lot of times, and my parents have tried to explain to me, but sometimes it's over my head. So what is a tax bracket? Like, how do I know what tax bracket I fall into? Can you speak on that a little bit?
So tax brackets are confusing for most everyone. And a lot of people say, why don't we just charge a certain flat rate on, 20% on everyone's income? Well, the reason why they don't do that is because 20% for someone who earns $20,000 versus 20% for someone who earns $300,000, that can make a big difference in quality of life. So what they do is they use a certain tax rate for every portion of income. So in 2019, now the tax brackets will change occasionally from year to year, and there can be some fluctuation. But in 2019, like the first $9,700 of your income was charged at this 10% tax bracket. And then the next chunk of your income was charged at another tax bracket. And then the next chunk of your income at an even higher tax bracket. So when someone says they're in the, 30% tax bracket, they're not paying 30% on all their income. And that was just the amount they were paying on that highest chunk of income.
Very interesting.
So the effective tax rate is what your average turns out to be based on what you actually pay versus your income. So everyone, the effective tax rate can be different. And that's kind of what it turns out you actually pay on your taxes. But when we hear tax brackets, you're not paying that highest tax bracket amount on your entire income. It's just that's how much you're paying on that last chunk that they've chunked your income into.
That's so interesting. Yeah, that does make sense. And it's so interesting. But I think it makes sense mostly because, like, for someone like me, I'm a teacher, right? So I won't get to that higher percentage rate because I don't make that much money. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Like, interesting.
So essentially, like, if the first half of your income was taxed at 10% and the second half of your income was taxed at 12%, your effective tax rate is 11%.
Huh. So cool.
Cool.
How did they come up with that? Do you know, like, how does they come up with that kind of formula or algorithm or whatever it's called?
What it is making sure that all taxpayers will pay the same rates on levels of income. So it's their way of kind of trying to make the system fair. Only people with higher incomes will pay higher taxes on that higher income.
Got it. That's so interesting. I can't imagine the brains behind that. Like, whoever came up with that plan, kudos to them because it seems very intricate. Very detailed. Oh my goodness. Wow, I'm learning so much. I love this. I'm so excited. Okay. Is there any money that we make that we don't file? We have to file everything that we make, right? If I'm making money, it has to be filed. I can't not file any income that I get. Like if I have if I babysit or something, and I charge the parents $10 an hour and I babysit 4 times this year. Like how would I go about filing that kind of money?
I'm not an accountant. I'm not a CPA. So my training has told me that any income you earned, you have to report. I just think it's better to err on the side of reporting it.
Oh yeah.
And rather than trying to squirrel out of not paying income tax on, possibly a summer nannying job or other things like that. So it's always best to report all your income and then figure out on the deductions and what you can deduct from that income. Because the government wants to know about all income you have coming into your household. And then after you report it all, and then you can pull out what is not taxable. So basically report it all, and then you can determine what's not taxable. But again, check with your CPA, check with your tax professional. But just being honest, we always want to err on the side of honesty and report our income.
Yeah. Huh. So many, I'm learning so much. This is awesome. So you mentioned money that's taxable and not taxable. And I think you'd also mentioned something about deduction. So how do I know if the money is taxable versus not taxable? And how do I know what I can claim as a deduction? Because I'm always confused with that, because I work with a CPA, like, oh, that's a deduction. I'm like, okay, cool. But like, why, how, like, what counts as a deduction?
In 2019, there was a lot of changes that came about with the deductions. And before it was couples, or if people were married filing jointly, and then people who were filing as single individuals, or filing individually, I should say, they had certain deductions. And these deductions, the standard deductions, were increased tremendously. So most people now will just take the standard deduction, because the standard deduction is so large. And I'm going to have to check on this. It's over 20 for a married couple filing jointly. And I want to say it's about half that for someone filing individually.
This all just makes me want to just have someone do this for me, which is a question I have for you. Like, you mentioned that you use a CPA, and someone like me, I feel like I may not know enough to like do it on my own correctly. So like, is there a best way, maybe a simplest way or an easiest way or a safest way to go about filing your taxes, or at least from your opinion?
Yeah. So if you are deciding whether to hire a tax professional, there's a range of tax professionals, right? Like, it goes from using software that's pretty well supported and you have access to like actual CPAs if you have questions, then, you know, goes from that to like the brick and mortar, where it's like these pop-up shops that come up in Walmarts and, you know, grocery stores, and they come up around tax season. And then it goes to like CPAs and other tax professionals. So there's a spectrum of tax professionals to choose from. Everyone hates this answer, but the answer is it depends. Like, your situation is going to dictate what's the best thing for you. But figuring it out may be a little tricky and intimidating, right? So for just the regular person who's not sure what level of tax help you need, what I'd recommend you go to is go to the IRS website. It's actually a very well-organized website. I mean, my brain understands it. I think it's a pretty good website. But they have a tool called the Interactive Tax Assistant. And we'll include the link in the podcast notes. And the Interactive Tax Assistant, you plug in your own information. So you'll need your income tax documents, your age, your spouse's age, and the amount of the federal income tax withheld. And you plug it in these little boxes, and then it takes you through the helper, and it shows you what the simplest forms are for your personal situation. Mm-hmm. And then depending on those forms, you can decide the level of help you need, whether it be just a software, or maybe you could do it on your own, or maybe you want to go to one of those pop-up shops, or maybe you need the full help of a CPA.
That's so, you're going to post that in the chat, yes. In the notes. Awesome. Because mm-hmm. I'm going to go to that website, because I've used CPAs in the past, and I've asked friends who are CPAs, and that all gets kind of expensive to like pay this person all this money to do my taxes for me. I've always been curious to try one of like the apps or one of the different things where I can do it myself. I'm just getting nervous because I don't want to do it wrong. And it sounds silly, but like, I don't think I make enough money for like the government to come after me, but I always get nervous. Like, I don't want to do it wrong and then like get a letter from the IRS, like, you owe millions of dollars because you filed your taxes wrong. So taxes always make me nervous. Always, always, always. I have my little file cabinet with everything in there to give to my accountant, but I always get nervous. But is there a difference between, I remember I've used CPAs before and then like an assistant accountant or something along that line. Like, is there a difference in like when you've, are working with a CPA, like their titles, and what do those mean? Do you know?
So there's a few different titles, and we financial people, we like our alphabet soup of credentials, and I wish I had a better term for it. There's just a lot of different letters that come after people's names, and it's like, what do they mean? And, you know, is one better than another? So we've been using the term CPA. That essentially means a certified public accountant. And that's someone who's licensed by the state to offer accounting services to the public. And, more than 40 states require they actually also pass an ethics exam. So wow. It's a really rigorous certification that people have to get through to have that CPA after their last name. They can help with things like tax audits, payment and collection issues, and appeals, in addition to tax planning and preparation. So when you see CPA and you're wondering why they may be expensive, that's why, because you're kind of paying for all that training that they've done. So my husband and I have gone to the point where we do use a CPA because, you know, when you're, we just feel more comfortable having that level professional's eyes on all of our stuff. But there's also something called enrolled agents. So you may see the term EA.
Okay.
Enrolled agents. Those are someone who are trained in federal tax matters and they're licensed by the IRS. They take a comprehensive test, and that test covers the preparation of both individual and business tax returns, representation of clients, and other aspects of being a tax professional. So that when you see an EA, that's what it means. A tax attorney is someone who's licensed by the state to practice law. They essentially are very knowledgeable with tax law in regards to the preparation of tax returns, tax planning, which is a big thing, planning out your taxes, and providing advice to clients on long-range strategies for their taxes. So when people have a significant amount of income and they want to know the best way to minimize their taxes and do it legally, they will go see often a tax attorney. And then there's also non-credentialed tax preparers. Those are people who prepare taxes without any professional credentials. And these are ones who they will prepare your taxes without certifications from the IRS or the Bar Association. So the IRS actually offers a voluntary program for non-credentialed tax preparers. And it's called the Annual Filing Season Program. And they essentially have to do 18 hours of continuing education. And that includes a 6-hour refresher course on tax preparation. And then they receive a record of completion from the IRS. So they are trained by the IRS by this Annual Filing Season Program, but they're not going to have all the credentials like a CPA, like an EA, like a tax attorney. There's actually 10 states that require their non-credentialed tax preparers to take a tax education course before registering in that state. So some states have gone above and beyond to make sure those folks have the additional training from year to year, but they're not going to have the full knowledge usually that like a CPA would or a tax attorney.
That sounds like they went to a lot of training for that, which is, I mean, awesome, right? That they are very well versed in helping us. So that's great. Wow. So any other people can help me with my taxes, essentially, just what I feel is going to suit my best needs. Very interesting.
I hate that the answer is it depends.
Yeah.
The answer is always it depends.
Yeah. I think it kind of seems like it's a personal decision, like what kind of help you think that you need and where you are as far as how much income you have. Because, yeah, I think it's a kind of personal decision you have to make. But it's good to, I think, know about all of your options. And then you can say, okay, well, I don't need this. I just need a little bit of help, or I need a lot of help like I do. But I have a real life example for you. So a couple of years ago, my friend and I wanted to start a tutoring company. We wanted to start like tutoring, like, and we wanted to make a company, and we were kind of being guided to make it into all of this like fancy alphabet stuff, like LLC and S Corp something. And like, so if you know, if there's young adults that are, you know, trying to start, maybe they want to be like, I don't know, a Catholic speaker, or they want to do something where it's not like a full-time job, but is there any benefit to making that into a kind of a corporation or an LLC or INS or whatever the other options are? Or is that like, as far as tax goes, is that not a benefit to even make it into a company kind of thing?
Again, the answer is it depends. And also, because I'm not a tax expert, I can't speak to anyone's particular situation.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, there's the terms mean different things for a reason.
Okay. So
LLC is a limited liability corporation, which means that the liability for debts and everything else is tied to the corporation. So it kind of protects your personal income. The definition is in the name, limited liability corporation. It limits someone's liability. Your whole situation will determine what the best route is for you. And if you are concerned the best way to go about it, that's when I would talk to an actual professional to know what the best way is while still protecting yourself. If something happened in the business, you don't want them to go after your personal bank accounts as well, right? So that's why they've created these different entities. But it's all going to depend on your personal situation.
So that would be something good to talk to one of those CPA or a tax attorney or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tried it and it worked out for a little bit, but I think it just was a lot of work on as far as having two jobs. So, but it's good to know that lingo. I think also it's very helpful because people throw around those letters and those words. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, mister. Can you please explain yourself? Yeah. So I have one last question for you. So this may be another one where it depends or it's a personal answer, but as far as like preparing for, you know, to pay your taxes, are there any certain files or papers that I should kind of keep together, safeguarded somewhere to have ready so I'm not scrambling at the last second like I was this year? Like any important things I need to have in order to file properly each year?
Yeah, I personally just keep a file of anything I think may be deductible when it comes to any of my business expenses or work travel and uniforms and different things like that. Also all proof of income, because again, you want to be completely honest. Honesty is a value that we all share as Catholics. We want to make sure we're being honest with our income. So I just keep everything in a file personally, all proofs of income, anything I think may be deduction, any information about my mortgage. But all those things I'll also send you again by January 31st, usually when you needed to file your taxes. And I just keep those things together and I keep them, even when I file my taxes, I keep them for at least 7 years filed away. They don't take up much space. I mean, it's not like we have huge filing cabinets, but what I will say, and this is something, that I always have to emphasize when I work with veterans and different programs and things like that. When you don't file your taxes and you're owed a return, the IRS is not going to come knocking on your door saying, hey, we owe you money, right? They have too much other stuff to do. I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying I haven't seen it happen yet. And you have up to 3 years to file a return and get your money back.
Wow.
Okay, so if you don't file your return, you only have 3 years to file it and actually get your money back. So I have a lot of people who, for some reason, they think they owe money. And honestly, it's very rare that I see they actually owe. Usually what happens is they were owed money and then they dig their head in the sand and they don't want to deal with it for several years. And then it turns out they could have had several $1,000 coming in the form of tax returns, but they never claimed it, and then they can only get the past 3 years. Now, you should file your returns every single year. The folks I'm dealing with are people who are in and out of homelessness and stuff like that. But I've learned this, that you can only get the past 3 years of tax refunds back if you don't file your taxes. So if you owe money, though, the government can collect it.
Oh, yeah.
So if you owe, that's a whole different story. But if you are owed back a return, you only have 3 years.
Wow. Very interesting. Caitlin, honestly, thank you so much. You answered so many of my questions, and I hope that someone else listening got some questions answered as well, because this is important stuff, and sometimes the important stuff is overwhelming, so we just push it aside. But I think it's something that I know I have to kind of start asking more questions and just being a little bit more of an adult about my taxes. So thank you so much for sharing all your wealth of knowledge with us. And if we miss any of your questions anyone has, please send us an email. We'd love to answer your questions. You can send us an email at podcast@compasscatholic.org. And one of us, probably Caitlin, will answer your questions about this at least.
All right. Thanks, Diana.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you liked it, would you please subscribe and share it with a friend? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or ideas for future episode topics, you can email us at podcast@compasscatholic.org, or you can give us a call at 407-878-7637. We are so happy to be on this journey with you.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.